That's right, beach.
Beach there.
Welcome into Negative War, Positive Vibes. It's been a minute since Billy and I have had a chance to get together and have a little fun podcast, but so much going on around Major League Baseball, we figured it was a really good time to go ahead and do this once again. As we get a little bit closer to the trade deadline, already a couple of deals done as we're recording this podcast on a Friday morning. We're 4 days away from the deadline being complete, which is 6 o'clock Eastern time on July 30th. But in the meantime, we'll get to a couple of trades that have happened. First, we want to get to some big news coming out of Major League Baseball and something we saw yesterday. Pretty special, Spilly. Dylan Cease, nasty Dylan Cease, the guy that we're told was going to be the opening day starter for the White Sox in Chicago. That didn't happen. He got traded before we got to opening day. And not only did he get traded to the San Diego Padres, but a no-hitter last night. Absolute dominance that we saw from Dylan Cease against the Washington Nationals. And it took him 114 pitches, which is a big deal these days, right? The idea of even letting him go for it. We love it for Mike Shildt, a guy we get to talk to on our show Loud Outs every week. Amazing performance from a guy really who has been dialed in here over his last three starts.
Yeah, so there's a lot there. I love that you brought up the past. You bring up that the opening day start was Chicago because we thought that was ill-advised at the time. It wasn't even like halfway through spring training. They're like, oh yeah, he's going to be our opening day starter. We're like, what? Okay. The Drew Thorpe kid that the White Sox got for Dylan Cease, though, good-looking pitcher. I like what I've seen. Agreed, so yeah. Far. I think in the case of Dylan Cease, I wasn't expecting him to be as productive as he has. He's leading the National League in punch outs by a lot. You know, he's been a horse. I think what stood out was after he was traded, if you remember, he went to Korea. Like the Padres and Dodgers opened up Major League Baseball this year in mid-March with a two-game set in Korea. And as soon as Dylan Cease got traded, he was like, I'll be there. And they're like, you can wait till they get back. They're going to be back in a couple of days. He was like, nope, I'm gone. And so he jumped on a domestic flight and flew to Korea to go meet his teammates, just trying to get in like right away. And this Padres team this year is 500, much better than people thought. They're the best hitting team in the National League as far as batting average goes. They're playing inspired baseball. They've done this without Joe Musgrove. They've done this without Yu Darvish. Dylan Cease, Michael King, Matt Waldron, like it's not 2 years ago Padres. And then yesterday's start, CJ, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this. Seventh inning, 94 pitches. Mike Shildt, who we will talk to on Monday on Loud Outs on Sirius XM. Mike Shildt basically said, you're done. And Dylan Cease was like, no, I'm at 94 pitches. I'm not done. And Shildt was like, okay. So he goes back out eighth inning, gets through that with 9 pitches. So he has the ninth inning at 103. And with the no hitter on the line, you got to let him go, right? Like there was only 323 no hitters in the history of Major League Baseball prior to Dylan Cease going out for that ninth inning. So 103. You have a couple off days coming up. I'm not sure if Mike Shildt do that yet because you have the chance to push off Dylan Cease's next start till August 2nd against the Rockies. Like you could legit wait 8 days for his next start. So if you are the manager and you're the pitcher, how do you talk him into letting you go back out there? And then what happens on the backside of it? Do you have to give him some days off?
You don't have to. It all depends on how he's feeling and how he recovers. It's so interesting, right, that we talk about this now. 114 pitches was never really that big of a deal, but it is. I mean, that is, I believe, the second most total pitches that we have seen in a game this year. Zach Wheeler threw 115, and so did Chris Bassett earlier this year. And the Wheeler game was a game that they actually lost to the Miami Marlins, right? So Cease at 114, that is a bigger deal. By the way, Wheeler also has 114 pitch game under his belt, which to me, side note there, with all of the innings that he's thrown over the last couple of years, does seem a little bit, not say concerning, but dangerous, risky, pushing him to those high pitch counts because of who he's been the last couple of years and the amount of innings that he has thrown. But in the case of Dylan Cease, there's a couple of things here. Once we know, of course, maybe you don't remember, but yeah, I told you many times, he grew up right down the street here, went to a high school. It's just a couple of miles from where I am right now, and heard his name all the time in high school. And then he got hurt. and he ended up having Tommy John, and he dropped in the draft. They said he was absolute first round material. He ends up dropping in the draft, and of course still goes on to have the great career, but he ended up being a sixth round pick. He was first round material. He'd gotten hurt, said he was headed to Vanderbilt, yada, yada, yada. The Cubs give him a little bit more money and figure out a way to get him signed. So you always have that in the back of your mind that he's already had the one surgery as far as how far you're willing to push this thing. Obviously, that was a really long time ago. He's 28 years old now. He was drafted a decade ago, and I don't think he hasn't had a surgery since then, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I don't think so.
Yeah, so that's the part where, I mean, 10 years is a good number by today's standards, you know, as far as how long these things last. So you have that little bit of a risk factor, but he has been in such a groove here lately too. And so, yeah, you push a little bit. I think with Mike Schilt, you know, it's one of our favorite things about talking to him. He's got a little bit of old school in him. He's been around the game for a long time, and he was willing to let him take that chance. Now, hopefully going forward, there is nothing that pops up, any soreness having to skip a start, especially as they're making this push right now. That would be really unfortunate. So we all just kind of keep our fingers crossed because we love seeing it. We love seeing pitchers get pushed and having a little bit of an old school feel, just like Paul Skeens earlier, a couple days ago, had a chance to go into the ninth inning. Like, if you told me that when he got called up that, hey, in late July, they're going to let him go into the ninth inning, I'd say no chance. I thought they'd baby him. They haven't. Let's hope this changes the trend a little bit between what we're seeing with Cease in his last one, what we're seeing with Skeens, a little bit of push on Wheeler. Maybe they'll let guys go because we have not come up with an answer on how to keep guys healthy. I will say this, though. I saw that start that he had three starts to go against the Braves, and he wasn't having that great of a year. Like, he was getting his strikeouts, but his overall numbers were just kind of okay for Dylan Cease and the dominant stuff that he has. And then he looked amazing against the Braves. And I know they've struggled offensively, but it was 11 punchouts in six innings. That his ERA came under four for the first time in a while after that start. But he was throwing 100 miles an hour after he was up to his 100th pitch. Like, he was carrying velocity deep into the game. And so he's been on this run now, including this no-hitter. 30 punchouts, two hits in his last 23 innings, Billy. Two hits in his last 23. I mean, he has been on about as a dominant role as you can be on right now. So I'm hoping that it's okay that he went and had this thing and got it done and doesn't show up. It's one of those things that I appreciate, and then I hope that we don't regret it down the road because he runs into some kind of fatigue. Figure out a way to get him an extra day or two if you can, and hopefully everything will be all right.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, it's kind of built in. So, like, there's a chance that if Dylan Cease is on his next scheduled start, it would be July 31st against the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium. That'll be a Clayton Kershaw, which is, it was, by the way, Clayton Kershaw being back yesterday, it was good to see him. The curveball's still pretty sweet. I guess when I'm thinking about the interaction of a player and a manager, because I've seen this now, right? Like, there's a lot of different organizations that are, you know, like the big example is always going to be Tampa Bay World Series, Blake Snell, boom, third time through the lineup. No, out. I don't care what you're doing. And to have a feel, it's not saying that Kevin Cash doesn't have a feel, and, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, but people always point to that. There's been a lot of organizations. The Dodgers don't traditionally let pitchers go a third time through the lineup. I'm seeing it now with San Francisco. I've seen it with Boston. Alex Cora is doing these platoon matchups, even though the bullpen isn't quite as strong this year as it was earlier in the year. But then you all get the contrast. You'll get somebody like a Brian Snicker with Atlanta. You'll get a Rob Thompson with Philadelphia, where he's okay pushing the starters if the starters are saying, leave me in. Who was the – I'm trying to remember the visual back. Was it Mike Mussina back in the day? Yeah. He's pitching for the Yankees, and here comes Joe Torre, and he, like, looks in there, and he's just, like, waves at him. He's like, don't you dare come out here, because you're not going to get the ball. You're not going to get the ball. So I think – you know, you have to have some self-awareness if you're the pitcher to try to do this. Like, you can't put yourself in jeopardy to try to get a no-hitter. You know, you can't put yourself in jeopardy to try, you know, as much as we want these guys to win every single game, we do. You have to do it within reason. There's somebody in the bullpen that is probably fresh and can get three outs too. Like, you don't have to hurt yourself to get that. So I just like that Dylan was aware of it. He had the trust of Mike Schilt. Like, that's that we just don't see that too often. We don't see it too often. So it's, like, really enjoyable to see. You're like, oh yeah, heck, let's see it.
Here's, like, as an example, and thinking about a guy, younger managers who we have some confidence that there's more influence in the front office than other places, right? Like as an example, you're right. Brian Snicker, no. Yeah, it's not to say that they don't communicate, but ultimately he's making decisions. If that's Ali Amar Mall, he has absolutely no chance of finishing that game. Right? I mean, when you get stuff that we know we feel confident is coming more from the front office than those decisions, like, you can't do it. And it's not to say that that's all a bad thing either, right? Using the data and the information that the front office has in your analytics department, like, you know, when you give guys an opportunity to manage on feel, it's nice. Again, let's hope it doesn't hurt Dylan Cease. The one thing, too, with him, as good of a year as he is having now, and it's kind of resetting. He had a stretch there for a while where I was like, what's going on with Dylan Cease? He had a 10-game stretch, Billy, in which his ERA was over 6. And he's still getting his strikeouts, but he was letting up a lot of runs. There was a lot of contact in there for him. He had let up 11 home runs in those 10 starts. Again, still a ton of punch outs. Walks are really good. But he was getting hit around a little bit to an 842 OPS. Like, for a 10-game stretch, that's significant. Started in middle of May and went through early July. And now he is just, just refused to fatigue, quite honestly. He's got something going here where he has found some extra strength. Because watching him finish up outings in particular is what really impresses me. Like, he's reaching back into triple digits on the pitch count and just still firing bullets, man. So it's fun to watch. This turned out to be a really good acquisition for the San Diego Padres, and they're off and running, man. I mean, they're trying to make this thing happen right now, and we will see if they can get it done. I mean, anybody having the opportunity to potentially challenge the Dodgers doesn't feel like it's a reality, but the West has just come in a little bit light so far. And so the idea that we're going to see, the Arizona Diamondbacks, we're going to talk about here in a minute, thinking about the San Diego Padres, like, if they can find ways, we'll see. They're still 7.5 games back right now. The Dodgers, they're probably tough to catch regardless of what's going on with the Dodgers right now, but certainly right in the wild card as they lead by 0.5 game. So the West is all of a sudden gotten really competitive. All right, Spilly, let's get to the news here. Big trade that had happened, and things getting started a little bit earlier, and a team that very much needed to be aggressive when it came to acquiring offense. It has been a struggle in Seattle. You and I have talked about this team quite a bit. Their pitching is some of the best in all of baseball, both in the rotation, certainly in the bullpen as well. But the offense has just really, really struggled. And so the Seattle Mariners make a pretty aggressive play. They go out and they get Randy Arozarena from the Tampa Bay Rays. A couple of players going the other way. Young outfielder Aiden Smith, a right-handed pitcher, Brody Hopkins, and apparently a player to be named later as well. But this really is more about the Seattle Mariners. Even though the Rays are still somewhat in this thing, 4 games back of the wild card right now, we felt like the Mariners had to be aggressive. This is a big move. Randy Arozarena is a big name. I know it hasn't been his best year, but he is now a member of the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, so I feel like it's bittersweet, because if you're a Rays fan, you know this day is coming. Even with the legend of Randy, go back to 2020, the playoff bubble and his ability to just hit with the lights on. And like, he has this reputation around Major League Baseball where, like, if the game's on the line, you do not want him hitting. If the lights are bright, you don't want him hitting. So I think it's really important for Seattle, because they have this chance, right? Like, you only have competitive windows for so long. They're not open for a long period of time. And it's usually surrounding your pitching staff. And the Mariners have a championship caliber pitching staff. They do. They just can't hit. I don't know why. I do not understand why nobody can hit in Seattle. That's like a longer conversation that, I mean, we'd really have to dig into it, because they've tried different versions. They went for power a year ago. It didn't work. This year, they're still punching out a crazy amount, and this is with contact guys. But I think if I'm a fan, because you get the two sides of it. You get Trader Jerry with Seattle, where you know he's going to be making all these crazy moves, kind of like AJ Preller. And then you have Eric Neander and the Tampa Bay Rays, that once their players start getting close to arbitration eligibility, year two, year three, free agency, you're gone. And that's not a bad thing. It works. We've talked about this. That's actually the better model, is to recycle players when they're at their earlier age. That's usually typically based on all the data that we have. Players are usually more productive early in their major league career. This is just a fact. The guys that are really, really good, right? The all-stars, Hall of Famer types, they play to the back of their baseball card. Most guys don't. By year four, you're starting to get diminished returns unless you're really, really good. So why not use that? They call it arbitrage it. Use your asset, spin it off, and then replenish. Mm-hmm. That kid that you mentioned, the pitcher, the right-hand pitcher, was
Brody Hopkins.
Brody Hopkins. Have you seen videos of this guy pitch?
I have not.
He's unbelievable. He's right-hander throwing darts with the wipeout slider. He's going to be a big league player. He's going to be a big league pitcher in the Rays. Right now, if you think about these little windows, CJ, the Tampa Bay Rays, not this year, but next year, think about the rotation. Taj Bradley has turned into an absolute stud. Jeffrey Springs is back. Drew Rasmussen is back. You have Shane McClanahan is back. You have this rotation, which is going to be a nightmare a year from now. And so the Rays are like, let's go get this kid that throws gas. We can get another position player. Randy's making money. So what? So long. Have a great career. I hope you win a World Series. Isak Paredes is probably the next one. By the way, he'd be a perfect Houston Astro just because of the left field. This is what Tampa Bay does, and he should be okay with it.
It's kind of wild, man. That kid, by the way, just got drafted last year, Brody Hopkins, the guy you're talking about, sixth rounder out of Winthrop University in South Carolina. He was a two-way player, but only a one-way player here professionally. But so far, 18 starts in A-ball this year. He's been in Modesto, 2.9 ERA, but the big number is the 95 strikeouts in the 83 innings. 83 and two-thirds innings, two home runs allowed. Get him to Double-A. The walks are a little bit high. He's got a 4.3 walk per nine rate. But I'm seeing a 22-year-old kid who is dominating right now in A-ball. He won't be 23 until January. Hopefully they put him in Double-A. Give him that next challenge. He looks like he is ready for it. And then it also, as you're kind of going through that list of the Tampa Bay pitchers and kind of what they're looking, they're not going in a deep rebuild. It's not what they do, right? They are legitimately probably the most efficient retool organization that we have in the game. It also tells me that Zach Eflin for sure should get traded, right? He's got 1 year left to control.
Yeah.
They got all these pitchers. I'm not saying necessarily that the kid they just acquired in Hopkins is in the rotation next year, but he might not be that far away if they get him to Double-A and get what they want to do with him the rest of this year. That'll put him knocking on the door at 23 years old. It's not like he's a young kid. So it seems to me more than ever now that Zach Eflin will be on the move. He's already been connected to teams like the Orioles and the Braves and others, but that'll be an easy guy to trade. There's nothing he can do to stop a trade as far as contractually. There is a $1 million assignment bonus, but with the money that he's making, I think it makes it even more likely. Not that we didn't think it was going to happen anyway, but after Randy Arozarena gets traded, after your rundown there of what they got coming here next year as far as getting healthy with their rotation, seems to me Zach Eflin will be in a different uniform. He's got $18 million due to him next year. Makes it even more likely, right? It was a backloaded contract with that $1 million assignment bonus. Seems simple to me that he will be gone.
Yeah, sayonara. And we forgot to mention Ryan Pepio. Pepio has been really good. And that was part of the Tyler Glasnow trade. So I think from one end, I follow an organization with the Rockies, right? Who refuses to make deals. They are risk adverse to it. Love their players. They think they're constantly in it. So they're not willing to make these hard decisions. Tampa's done this year after year after year after year after year. And from a fan's perspective, you know, you hear, well, it's hard to root for the Tampa Bay Rays because they're only here for 2 or 3 years. Okay. I hear that, but you're also competitive majority of the time because you are recycling. You're recycling, 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 and those numbers do match up. That's how you're able to compete within that American League East with a quarter of the salary that these other organizations have. Now, it's not saying that they don't use a lot of money in R&D, in scouting, in coaching, in development of the players, because they do. They spend as much as anybody. But from a major league salary standpoint, in order to keep it down, they have to move players forward. And I think I would enjoy being a fan of that. I think I would. But I also recognize that there's also a part where, you know, when I was growing up and when you were growing up, like your players were on their team from basically start to finish. You had like the same, even if the team was getting older, you're like, no way would they trade Nikowski. He's way more valuable to that team than he is to another team. So no way would we trade that guy. He means too much. Rays are like, nah, gone.
Yeah.
Gone. See you later.
No emotion whatsoever into it. There's an old Jerry Seinfeld bit about When it comes to rooting for teams and the teams that you love, we know, of course, Jerry Seinfeld's a big Met fan. And he said, what are we really doing here? We're just really rooting for our uniform versus your uniform, right? It's not like we're friends with these guys, but we know these guys. And if you're a Rays fan, that could not be more true, right? You just want your uniform to do well, understanding that the people in those uniforms are constantly changing. And so you'll be very happy if your uniform wins a world championship, no matter who's in it, right? No matter who's wearing the uniform that year. And unfortunately, with the way their market is set up, that's kind of how you have to look at it, I think, as a Rays fan. Another trade that happened here that we found out about, and actually, Spilly, if you remember, I had saw a Diamondback series, the second to last series before we got through the All-Star break. And immediately after watching that team, we had talked on Loud Outs, and I said, listen, they have got to get a left-handed swing and miss reliever. To me, that seemed like one of the biggest needs right now for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they have gone out and they have done that. They made a trade for A.J. Puck, a big left-hander from the Seattle Mariners. That deal is done. There's three players that are going. Oh, so check that. Two players that are going the other way to the Marlins. An outfielder who I don't think I'll be able to say his name right. Davison De Los Santos and Andrew Pintar, who's a center fielder. So two corner infielder and a center fielder that they have acquired. But this is more about the big leaguer that the Arizona Diamondbacks are getting. Last year, we saw them go out and trade for Paul Sewald to beef up that bullpen. They end up making it to the World Series, ultimately losing to the Texas Rangers. This time, they go out and they get Puck, a guy who could close if they needed him to, but they don't need him to, of course, with Sewald there. But a pretty good swing and miss lefty. His strikeouts are down this year. The rate is down by a pretty decent margin. He was at 12.4 per nine last year. He's at 9.2 right now. So down a little bit, but no doubt an arm that they believe in. And A.J. Puck is kind of that first big reliever to fall, as he is now a member of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I love I love what the Diamondbacks have done. I like how they play. I like how they go about their business. A little bit different than the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, this team does feel like the front office is a little bit different. Mike Hazen, of course, you heard the story, you know, losing Nicole, his wife, to brain cancer 3 years ago, and just overcoming that. And this group is really kind of unique when you watch how they go about playing. Corbin Carroll hasn't had a great year, but they're right there in the mix. Like, if you watch Diamondbacks baseball, it's like pleasing because they don't make huge mistakes. They do all the little things like fundamentally correct. I think a lot of that has to do with Dave McKay. You know, Dave McKay, Torrey Lovello, like Tony Parascica, like their coaching staff, really, really good. And then you have the everywhere Brent Strom goes, like legit, everywhere Brent Strom goes, postseason appearances follow. So I just feel when I'm watching the Diamondbacks, like even when they got off to a brutal start, I was like, oh yeah, they're fine. Like, just let these guys continue to play. They'll be okay. And you know, now what do you add to this group? I think you just continue to add to their bullpen. Bullpen's the cheapest thing you can do, even though it still costs you a prospect, right? Cole Reagans last year seemed like not a big deal from Texas Rangers standpoint, and he turned out to be one of the better starters in baseball now for the Royals. So I'd like to see how this reliever market shapes up, CG. That's what I'm curious to see how Baltimore is going to tighten their bullpen, because yesterday they had a scare in Miami with Craig Kimbrell. Like, the Kimbrell experiment, it's not an experiment, but you need to have more there. You need to have, like, you need some more arms now if we're talking about the true teams that we think are playoff capable and World Series capable.
Yep, I'm with you on that one for sure. The Orioles have got to get themselves essentially that swing and miss backup kind of closer, based on exactly what you said. I think even before yesterday, that was the feeling in Baltimore. So A.J. Puck off the board. Mason Miller pretty much off the board. Ended up breaking his hand, not throwing hand, but either way, very unlikely at this point that he would get traded. A lot of people thought that might have been an option. I want to ask you about one last thing before we get out of here, because you and I will not be on radio again until Monday, the day of the trading deadline. And that is the Garrett Crochet situation here. Talking about publicly how he wants to stay in the rotation. We got reports from John Heyman and Ken Rosenthal and others, because he's such an interesting guy. We talk a lot about his innings. What do you do with him if you acquire him this year? Do you put him in the bullpen? Is it more about the next 2 years of control and why you would want him? The other thing that sticks out, so one, he wants to stay in the rotation. We heard him talk to Kevin Francis about that during the All-Star game and our coverage that we had there at MLB Network Radio. And then the idea that he apparently would like an extension if he's going to pitch in October. There's no way you could do that, right? I mean, to me, when I hear a player say that, he's 2 years away from free agency, and essentially I get the idea that he's like, listen, you're going to ask me to do something and push really hard here to pitch for you in October. And basically the guy had 25 innings last year recovering from the Tommy John surgery that he had previously. You can't acquire him and extend him for like 4 years and have 5 or 6 years of control. He's not in that position like other players are that can, you know, they have control over a trade. And it's okay. You can trade for me because I have a no trade clause. You got to give me an extra year or you got to give me an extension. Like, you know, we saw with Tyler Glasnow, we saw with others, you know, what Nolan Arenado did when he went over to St. Louis and having that last year picked up and the different things that players with that kind of leverage have. And I don't mean this like meanly, but he has no leverage here. He has no leverage to be in a spot that says, I don't want to be traded or unless you're going to give me the contract extension. So what that does for me is it throws it out there. Like, are we going to have a problem here? If we acquire this really good guy and we want to actually put him in the pen or we have a slow play to make sure we have him in October and then he's in our rotation the next 2 years, some of the biggest draw to him besides the fact that he's nasty is that there's 2 years of arbitration control. What do you do if you're a team that was interested in Garrett Crochet and now he's saying, listen, I want to stay in the rotation and I want an extension if I'm going to pitch for you in October?
Oh, yeah. Man, that is a question. I mean, like, could you do it? Could you offer it? Could you do performance incentives? Do you really want to be doing that? You know, like, okay, so if you're willing to trade prospects for it, and, you know, let's say in the assumption of Crochet is going to probably command like a 3 or 4 prospect package, I like doing it by counting it by years. So, you know, 4 players, it's essentially 6 years of control for each one, assuming they make it to the big league. So that's 24 years of control. And then they, you know, they also assign values of like, you know, if the guy's a 1-win player, it's worth about $8 million per season of that guy. So let's put another value of the 24 years of control and say like, it's worth, you know, $3 million for all those guys per year. So that gets you right around $72 million. Okay. So $72 million worth of value for Garrett Crochet. And then are you willing to offer him an extension on top of that after trading the prospect package? Because reality is if he's just making league minimum and then through arbitration, he's not going to get anywhere near $72 million. Not in that time frame. So are you willing to extend on top of it additional years of free agent capital? I don't think so. I think I kind of want to see it proved out. Like, I also like the carrot dangling in front of the player. Now, I also understand, like, from a pitcher standpoint, like, if I'm going to pitch for you and I blow out, like, what happens in the next year? I lose all my my opportunities to make money. So, you know, could you come up with a plan that is, why don't we sign you through your arbitration years? That way you still have to play through free agency. And that's also 3 years down the road. So we could still have another conversation about an extension through free agency. So if you want to sell out your arbitration years, usually you can get that at a discount too from a team standpoint. Mm-hmm. So yeah, okay, I'll give you an extension, but it's just to buy out your arbitration years. We're not touching free agency yet because we don't know.
We don't know. Unless you want to give up a year of free agency, then a team might be interested, right? But they're not interested in the 6 or 7, 8 year deal. I can't imagine. By the way, These are only reports. These are not actual quotes from Garrett Crochet, but our insiders picking up apparently on that is out there regarding him. But you're right. I mean, he's only making $800,000 this year, and that's because he would have been making more. It was his first year of arbitration eligibility, but he basically didn't pitch hardly at all last year, just 12 innings in the big leagues, 12 and change more in the minor leagues for that rehab. And so even the jump that he's going to make via arbitration is a little bit different than your average guy because of his starting point, right? His jumping off point right now and the risk that's involved. So we'll want to see him cash in. He is unbelievably dominant, but we're trying to be as objective as possible and saying, what really is the play here? If you're an acquiring team, there are a lot of teams that would like to get their hands on him. They're going to have to give up a lot of significant pieces to get it, as you kind of laid out. And the risk there is probably just a little bit too high, man. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll see if anything else becomes more public. These next few days are going to be amazing. Things picking up. AJ Puck to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Randy Arozarena to the Seattle Mariners. And we are just getting started. I have a feeling Spilly and I are going to have to chime in again, probably with another podcast. If anything big happens over the next couple of days, we will be together on Loud Outs on MLB Network Radio, 2 to 5 Eastern Time on Monday. So we'll be with you just about an hour before that deadline actually hits. That'll be live on SiriusXM channel 89, and I'm sure we got a lot more that we are going to get to. We appreciate you guys listening. As always, we apologize for our absence. Man, we've just been busy, a lot going on, a lot of travel, calling games, and of course, calling games right there on SiriusXM MLB Network Radio. Have a wonderful day, everybody.